This is Camping While Awesome, and my name is Warren.
This is Lane.
This is Ali.
Ali, I have a question for you. Would you rather eat a baby goat or a matter baby?
Or a what?
A baby goat.
Would you rather eat a baby goat or a matter baby?
What's a matter baby?
Nothing, sugar. What's the matter with you?
I didn't fall for it.
Sugar?
Why? How the hell did Lane exactly fall for that? The other one is, do you have a matter daddy?
What's a matter,
what's
daddy?
A matter daddy?
Nothing. What's the matter with you?
That's not as good. I think baby's better.
All right. That's fine. I think they're both really good.
So you knew it.
Oh, yeah.
And you work with Brian, so there's also precedence.
Yeah. Brian Booth.
Yeah. He told me he took the Airstream out again, but I asked him if any poop came out, and he said no.
No, but he had a pretty funny little snafu, which is, they were running it off grid with the new lithium system and all of this stuff, and everything was running great. And I think his wife bumped the 12 volt master switch, or they may have hit the breaker for that master switch, and they had to go like the second half of their camping trip with no power in the trailer. And they didn't realize that there was just a master switch by the door that got tripped. So he came back. I saw him on Monday or something, Tuesday. And I said,
why didn't he text you?
I don't know. I said, how was your trip? And he's like, oh, pretty good and all this stuff. And I said, how'd everything go? He's like, I think I fried the 12 volt system. And I was like, oh, okay, no problem. Let's go check it out. And he explained what happened. I said, did you turn the switch off near the door? And he just looked at me. He walked away. He came back and he's like, it was the switch. Everything works.
Damn. Dude, that reminds me of when I was.
It's just like, how obnoxious is the stupid Airstreams, like 12 volt, like just the systems.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's horrible. Why make it so weird? Like the water, the hookups and all that not being marked is so ludicrous.
Everything. Yeah.
It's so bad. By the way, my neighbor bought a new trailer, not an Airstream, but you know, whatever brand, with black tribal graphics on the side of it. Brand new. Bought it from Utah because it was cheaper and all that stuff. They've used it maybe 3 times. Already the plumbing underneath the trailer is leaking. The fridge door doesn't line up at all. The part of the electrical system has some funky thing to it. Brand new, like $35,000. They're so bad.
When you watch, I watched some videos, those trailer manufacturer videos, and it's like, why, we're better than the other ones, you know?
Because they use like 3/4 inch plywood. Like,
it was Forest River, one of them, or whatever their parent. There's two.
Hood River, right? Or
Hood River and Forest Thor, River, or something.
Thor and Forest River.
It wasn't Thor though.
There's other ones then.
But anyways, it was Forest River. No, it was one company. Forest River has like a subsidiary. Like there are two companies. Yeah. And they're like, why we're better? They didn't show why they're better. They just showed them making trailers basically. But it was funny. Like when they're putting the vents in up top, it's like our vents are 8 inches wide, and it shows this Amish dude like putting the vent, and they're just like running these like really flimsy venting, taping off the seams. Like they don't even fit together properly. It's just like putting tape, and you're like, that tape. Tape looks like it'll last. Maybe it's probably not even sealed right now, but it's definitely not going to be sealed in.
Yeah, exactly.
Two years.
That's the thing. Is like it might be fine sitting in place, but you're driving down the road, bumping down the road, like crashing over everything. And
yeah, I mean these factories not only are not set up without any real like quality structure, but I don't even think there's accountability. Like,
oh, hell no.
No.
And the dealer networks for these RVs have no leverage with the manufacturer. So little to no leverage. And so it's like, the service experience just ends up sucking, and not because of the service station that you just bought your camper from. It's because the manufacturer sent that service station a giant pile of garbage.
I wonder if Westfalia is better, you know, just overall, like, because they never made something so big, right? Like these are big like houses, whereas Westfalia just made these little tiny kitchens and storage compartments and stuff, but they seem to hold up so well.
Well, the structure, you know, you're
in a metal
fabricating box. A structure out of a bunch of like Home Depot supplies versus a real automotive stamp steel body that's the backbone of all of these pieces.
For sure.
Yeah, I watched another video and it was a Discovery Channel video, like how a trailer is made. And it was just showing like the way everything's constructed. It was just like the wood flooring and then them like stapling it together. And you're just like, how is this? Like, imagine this thing rolling down the road. It's crazy. The Discovery video is also funny because like they have a narrator. It's like, and then the frame is soldered together and soldered
like a little
shows them welding it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, no, they may be soldering it because
like plastic soldering.
No, like they're brazing kind of technically it's called brazing.
It was straight up doing, it was welding.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. Anyways, it's
soldering. Yeah.
It's just I think it's just one of those things where somebody paid a marketing team to just do it
and
ship it before they even reviewed it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. If you had to be chauffeured in any vehicle, what would it be?
Jesus Christ. Where'd that question come from?
And it can be a modified vehicle. It doesn't have to be just off the shelf.
Any vehicle.
Any vehicle throughout time.
What's the scenario, though?
Throughout time.
Sure, if you want.
What's the scenario? Like, is it just all of life or is it a particular like place to play. Like
chauffeured back and forth to work every day like, for the rest of your life. Like, what is it?
Your ticket comes in and you are now worth more money than you know how to spend. You decide to get a driver and they need a car to drive you around in. They're available whenever you need them. It may not be every drive. You have other cars and stuff, but your drives to work, et cetera. So forth and so on drives are driven. So what are you going to go with? I have this theory.
I have two answers.
I do too. So
I have an answer.
One angle is you don't want to look like you're being chauffeured, right? You want to be under the radar, and they do make vehicles like this, and we can get into this a little bit, but under the radar means being in like a van, let's say, let's call it a Sprinter van for lack of a better word. It has to be modified to be like badass inside, right? But Sprinters are industrial vehicles that don't drive very well.
Metris
is okay, but it's not going to be as good as a GLS Mercedes.
No.
Or a Maybach.
Yeah, like why isn't the answer just, you know, I think the flamboyant answer is a Cullinan or something like that.
But Cullinans have back seats.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They're just very plain compared to like a Maybach.
I don't think we were invited to the Rolls Royce Park.
I was not.
You've never been in a Cullinan? You know.
I have not. No. But I would say something like a van of some type. And then you just put like the plushest, best seat in the table.
The key about like, honestly, I would do unlimited money, whatever. I would do an all-wheel drive Sienna, but then just strip it, gut it, and like go full like West Coast Customs on it on the inside.
I just think that you're starting with a Mercedes GLS with the, you know, best air suspension they make and sound insulation, and then you'd rip that interior out, and instead of being a three-row SUV, you put in like two insane thrones, right?
Yeah, but the floor is so much higher.
True.
And
there's some disadvantages. There's
like honestly, it would probably be just like an outfitted Metris in like a silver or something like that for the like low-key thing. Because then you could just build the hell out of it on the inside, do a really nice build out. And then on the flamboyant side, it's just, you know, I don't know, just a Rolls Royce Phantom or a Bentley Cullinan or something like that.
I'd probably just pick like a Tesla Model Y.
No.
Yeah. So like, you know, quiet, you want quiet and smooth. I mean, what about a Lucid, something that's electric that.
I'd probably do a Lucid over any of the Rolls Royce or Bentley or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
Good call.
I'd rather do a Rolls Royce over a Lucid any day.
I need to drive a Lucid. I want to see what it's all about.
It still doesn't stack. That interior doesn't stack up to anything close to it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, you're looking for like.
I haven't spent any real time inside a Lucid or a Rolls Royce, so I'm like a little bit out of my
situation. Well, you've been in a Bentley, and like, dude, Lucid doesn't have that long hair killer carpet. You just want to take your feet off.
You can add that.
And rub it in the floor.
We're talking modificata.
Yeah, but what I would do is I would buy the Lucid and then send it to Aria Group or something and have them redo the inside how I'd want it.
Why don't you just buy a Rolls Royce?
Well, you'd have to do the same thing. You'd have to do the same thing with the Rolls.
They're going to be.
But I think...
Okay, then in the future, it would be an S-Class.
Why do you want it to be electric?
Silent.
I think EQS is a good answer.
I hear they don't ride very well.
Oh.
But maybe you can modify it. The reason I ask is...
Isn't this a camping situation?
Well, see, that's what I'm getting at. That's what I'm getting at, is that I think for us, all three of us would not want a Rolls Royce. We would go towards the other end of the spectrum, which is something more stealth. And that's why I was asking, because you said Metris, like that's a pretty good option. Discontinued, by the way.
In the United States. Yeah. Bummer.
I know. It's a bummer.
I was hoping they would lean into it a little bit, bring the all wheel drive over.
I know. Like, they needed to market the hell out of it.
The electric Metris that exists.
Like, weren't they pretty unreliable?
Yes. And they're hard to fix.
Yeah. They're kind of garbage.
And I feel like they did a poor job at marketing it.
There was zero marketing.
Yeah, they did a horrible job. They didn't. Like,
did
no
I
job.
Even know they ever came to the States? No.
There's
no.
zero marketing.
I remember seeing them at SEMA when they came out. That's the only time I ever saw them.
It's like you had to be in the
But that's like joke. Why I said Sienna, is because you get all-wheel drive, you get Toyota reliability.
Yeah, I like
and
that
And the
answer.
Ride is like, it's good, and if you want to make it better, just put airbags on it. And
I think you could make a Sienna really cool, and that's... a very good answer. It's reliable. It's totally stealth. It doesn't stand out at all. You could park a Sienna on any street and no one would really care about it.
Yeah, and if your driver's not around, you're totally fine driving it yourself too.
So
that's true.
The client I've talked about a lot that I used to have, that's what he rolled in.
But he had Sienna. Full yep. modifications, right?
Yep.
Or he did. Our good friend Carl Bass's daily driver is a Sienna.
He also did Brembo brakes and HRE wheels.
Sick.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. I like that thought, though. I always think of stealth camping, too, where you have the van, and inside it's obviously your full camper, but on the outside it's like the plumbing truck, or I was trying to think what would be the best fake business to have on the outside of the truck where you wouldn't get fucked with. No one really would care.
Locksmith?
That's pretty good. That's not bad.
Because you're like, but you then can people be might, anywhere at any time.
And what are you really carrying around?
And like, what are you going to steal a bunch of key blanks and a key cutter?
But like, let's say you're parked on a street for a few nights and people see you and they're like, what's this shady f***ing locksmith doing?
I'm going to be like, I'm on surveillance, dude. Like,
yeah. How about surveyor?
Surveyor could be good, but
like very low.
And then you have the big
land surveyor.
It looks like you have the tubes on top, but that's actually an awning.
Right. And your shower.
Geological research.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's it. It's just called Geological Research Foundation.
Pretty good.
Yeah. That's a good one.
I think there's something to that, because I think these days there's a lot of negativity towards the
boondockers.
Boondocking thing.
Totally.
And the whole sprinter life. And it's kind of like, it's seen as like a rich person, kind of like, oh, look at these people. They're just like camping out in front of my house, but they're wealthy.
Dude, it's rich. It's rich guy, poor guy.
Yeah.
We're right back to that.
It's total rich
because
guy, poor
it's
guy.
Either exactly. It's either a total roached out Winnebago or the $200,000 Sprinter.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of in between. And you see the guy in the Sprinter and it's just this big behemoth thing.
And I think it's just like negative connotations about that person before. Like a lot of people have them. If you go to like a surf spot and they're like,
there's already
screw
bumper
this,
stickers.
It's kook, like with the, you know, just
bumper stickers.
There's
now.
A Instagram account. I forget what it's called now, but it's like, it's something about like van life and like you're a kook or something.
Well,
like
that's why I posted that beautiful RV from Detroit on Camping Well Awesome. And
yeah,
the only caption I can think of is one less Sprinter, because that thing is definitely not a Sprinter.
No, what was that based on?
So if you want to go on Camping Well Awesome Instagram, it was based on I have no idea, but some just tweaker dude kept building it, and it's got eight wheels, two front axles, both steer. The worst body design I've probably ever seen, probably equal to that car we saw at Carmel Concours, the twin engine.
That bad. Corvette,
I think it was probably worse, but also more. Actually, no. This was
where was
more
this? This
inventive.
Looks like a 70s like 70s creeper van, but like done up by some sci-fi author, not a movie maker, like a sci-fi author. Like goes a little bit overboard.
Yeah, I think it was one of those where he just never stopped the project. He like started out with one thing and then made it a dually. And
it's
then,
like the Winchester Mystery House of
and
cars.
It's still going.
It's
like
called the Cosmic Cruiser.
Cosmic Cruiser.
Kind of a rad name.
Pretty cool. You know what's crazy? The front, like from the wheels to the front, like usually you would either be, it would be straight parallel with the ground or it would go up. This goes down.
Whoa. Yeah. It's not good.
Like I'll let you know, reversing back about 5 minutes in the conversation, that would be what I would want to be chauffeured in.
Had a bed in the back and then weird bench seat, like a limo, and then huge, like two huge 12-inch subwoofers, like facing the passengers. Just get sick. Completely destroyed in this thing. But you'd already be roofied, so it wouldn't really matter.
Dude, the rear end is pretty rad looking. Like that, that rear side.
I think
side
that rear corner is pretty fucking rad.
It's gnarly.
It's cool, dude.
BF Goodrich all-terrain, or radial TAs, right? Yeah, that's a scary one. But where was I going with
no,
that?
No, but I think it, there's definitely something there of like thinking a little bit more up to date over the last 6 months or so, my mentality has also changed where I think a cool low key short wheelbase sprinter with like a pop top or a Metris with a nice pop top, no like crazy water tanks and awnings and all of this shit hanging out. Just like, you know, something that almost looks normal being commuted in every day, but is like mega set up on the inside
for sure.
Like I can imagine Tool Rig would be able to build a sick like short wheelbase sprinter that looks pretty plain Jane on the outside, but is just outfitted on the inside to be totally dialed. Modular and dialed and everything.
Yeah, and then you put your surveying company on the outside or your locksmith.
I think that's key, dude. Like doing the company.
Yeah,
that is like clearly not a cool outdoor company.
Right. Yeah, you don't need the compass graphic on the side and the, you know.
Yeah.
All that stuff, but
never lost.
Never lost.
That's a good one. We should,
I was going so far as to think about creating a fake ladder. It's not really a ladder. It's actually like a water storage for a shower, and it can heat up. So it's like a resin, like a hollow resin shaped thing that looks like a ladder, but in fact, it is a solar shower.
What if it could be just a ladder that's
if
hollow?
You can make them both, I'm all in.
That's your surveying tube, right? Like you were saying.
Or just, yeah, you can do that too, but you know, this is just another idea, is the camping ladder that's also a solar shower.
Interesting.
So it'd be black, you know, and heat up in the sun.
And it would be a ladder.
And it could be a ladder.
We could use it at Burning Man too.
That's right. Well, no one takes showers there.
Oh, yeah.
That's a trick question.
Dude, did you hear, I think it was the Smoking Tire podcast, Zach's description of what was happening at Burning Man.
Did he go?
Yeah.
He did.
Oh.
Yeah. It was no, like, he was talking about how there are like some ridiculous 200 or 400 flights a day in and out of Burning Man, all small charter and private planes. And there were people, lots of people, and it was $700 for a day of flights back and forth that would get a hotel.
Oh my God.
And they would fly in, spend the day or the night or whatever, and then fly back and shower and sleep in their hotel.
No.
Yeah.
That is so frail. I don't like that at all.
The best way to see Burning Man ever. So,
meanwhile, Lane and I have two tickets for
Burning Man
next
year. Chartered flights out of Reno.
Yeah.
I was able to get a direct flight to the Four Seasons.
Oh my God. That is,
but
I've never
heard
that.
We'll be getting there until about 10 a.m. We have breakfast buffet.
Here I am thinking like an RV is cheating and then these people are flying back to their hotel. That's so weird.
It's gnarly. Like, it's so gnarly. It's like so not what anything is about.
Well, it's like, why would you even go?
Exactly. Like, exactly. Why what's the point?
Yeah.
But that's all
so that they can take a selfie. Orgy town or whatever.
Well, that sounds pretty good. But this is all the tech money, right? That they just like.
Yeah, I think
they
so.
Think they're still hippies, but they're look at their bank account and they're like, well, we could just fly in. I could see flying in as the luxury, but staying for the week, like someone else has your setup. But
I think the raddest thing would be if somebody with like a crap ton of money makes like a mockery of Burning Man by making like a tour bus and like getting old people to like just drive through it or something. Like almost
like
making it into a tour, like a sightseeing tour. Where it's like all of a sudden there's like a bus of like old people like walking by and they stop. they get out and they're like 15 minutes before the bus leaves. Like,
so I wonder how it works. I got to talk to my buddy Sean, who's flown in there, but you fly in and then does someone check your tickets? Because tickets are really hard to get and they're expensive. So
yeah, I have no idea.
Full lottery system. So I wonder if they have like a gate to get out of your plane and get in, or is it literally like once you fly in, you're in? Like
unknown.
Anyways, not that I care, but
yeah, Burning Man does not interest me at all.
But see, I would love to do a trip like this. We talked about this last episode or whatever, but like a dry lake bed trip with friends, like camping.
Oh, yeah,
while awesome, camping while awesome on a dry lake bed, it sounds brat. But this whole shit show does not sound great.
Yeah, and as I said before, I'd rather be on a wet lake bed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a
wet lake bed, or
I'd
just
rather be next to a lake.
Next to a lake,
muddy, a muddy shore.
I'm like, Lane, that's not cool. Dude.
It doesn't have to be muddy.
Down in the,
wet lake.
What about a real lake?
Yeah, but yeah, exactly.
How about a real lake?
Well, they don't. It doesn't mean that
sleeping at night.
It doesn't mean that if you go to a dry lake bed, you can never go to a regular lake. I'm just saying.
Is there a dry lake bed that has a real lake in it, like Inception style?
Maybe Salt Lake.
Lake Mead. No, that's not what I meant.
How about Area 51?
Mono Lake.
What is that thing in your hand?
It's a knife.
That's scary.
It's a fidget knife. Fidget knife? It's just bloody. It's like a tiny little knife.
It's not very sharp.
It's very cool, though. It's like super precise looking.
It's made by a guy in Folsom, D-Rocket.
Do you ever designs? Do you ever get on Instagram, there's like all those engineering like little memes or whatever posts about like the really precise fitting joints, you know, where it like looks like one block of metal and then they like slide it apart and it's like all.
Yeah, I've made those before.
They're cool.
They're, those are used using a machine called a wire EDM or a sinker EDM, but those are usually used. The machine is called a wire EDM and stands for electronic discharge machining. Hmm. And it's a activated thin wire that essentially gets charged up to a high voltage and it vaporizes the atoms as it touches the metal and it cuts very, very precisely. And what you can do is that actually those, all of those models are made out of two parts. It's a little bit cheating. They cut the outside profile, then they offset the cut by the wire diameter minus about 20
dude,
or 30
it's so
microns.
Precise.
And then they cut it. So the machine can go down into like the 25 micron range or finer.
Jesus.
Then they'll cut the other side of it and then they just get it to slip together. But they usually make like 5 or 10 of them before they get all the settings just right. And then they'll make one, you put it all together and then you have to go post machine it again. But damn, once it's done, it looks incredible.
Super cool. Yeah. Speaking of nothing, this is a good segue, but,
I'm pretty sure this is the episode about nothing.
Ollie's kind of famous.
He is.
Dude.
Jesus.
Wall Street Journal did a whole story on little Ollie over here.
It was my car. It wasn't me.
There was a big picture. You're smiling.
It started out with 46-year-old Ollie John. Yeah.
Now I know how old you are. That's
I'm 47,
first thing that
by the way.
Are you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You just had a birthday, huh?
Yeah.
Congratulations, thanks. First of all.
Thanks to AJ and photographer. That did the work.
AJ, what's his
AJ last name? Bame.
AJ Bame. So for the listeners, if you didn't see, Ollie was in the Wall Street Journal featuring his 2002 BMW and everything that it took to get it to where it is today. How did that come to be? Like, why did they feature it?
I think actually you were right there.
Did you pay them?
No. We were at the Quail. We were sitting there at the Quail.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Me and Jason Camisa, I think you were there. Mm-hmm. Lane was there. And this guy like comes up to me. He's like, hey, my name is AJ Bame. I want to do a feature on your car. And I was like, okay. So I started talking and then I'm like looking at Jason to see at if Jason recognized this reporter. Cause I figured, okay, Jason probably knows who this person is if I should really pay attention to them. And then he said, I write for Road and Track and Wall Street Journal. And then I said, okay, well, let's talk. And I talked to him for a few minutes about the car. And then he gave me his card and said, reach out to me after car week. I'd love to do a feature on your car.
Was he already aware of your car before the Quail? Or did you just like
I don't know. I think he just stumbled upon it at the show.
He's got a good eye, is what you're saying.
Yeah, probably. And so right after that, I turned to Lane. I'm like, dude, who's AJ Bame or Bame?
Yeah, he said, this guy wants to write a feature on my car. He says he's a journalist, but I don't know. And he said, I said, what's his name? He said, AJ Bame. And I'm like, yeah, he wrote like Go Like Hell. Like he's pretty well known.
Yeah. Ford versus Ferrari story. Yeah. Like, yeah. So anyways, that was the, so I reached out to him after, after car week. And, we talked for about an hour over the phone. He actually lives in the neighborhood I grew up in, out in like, Roseville, Granite Bay area.
Nice.
And so, we talked for a little while. He totally dug the story of the car and my story with the car. He said he was going to set up a photographer to take some photos of the car and gave me the photographer's name. And I was like, dude, this guy's never shot any car. Like he's always doing like war photography or this weird. This,
oh, like, right. He's like Wall Street
journalist style. Or yeah, whatever. Yeah. And by the way, I found out that like, yeah, AJ Bame is quite well known. He writes the My Rides feature in Wall Street Journal, like all of this stuff. So anyways, he set me up with this photographer. The photographer asked me for spots. We went up to Skyline Alice's and that did that whole loop drive and just stopped at all the cool spots. Photographers ended up, there were two of them. He brought one of his friends who was a huge like Radwood era BMW and Radwood fan.
Hmm.
So he's like, oh yeah, I totally know how to shoot these cars and like this and that. So he took point on all the photography work. And then some of the images, Lane, especially the ones that looked a little bit more muted, were actually on film. He told me, he said he shot it on one because he halfway through the shot shoot, he brought out his, what is it? RZ45, the 120 camera. So anyways, it was a fun shoot. And then like a, I don't know, 3 or 4 days later, AJ says, oh, we're going to put your story in right away. And I thought it was just going to be
fast.
Yeah. I thought it was just going to be on like digital or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, hey, pick up Tuesday's Wall Street Journal.
Dude, and that's awesome.
So
congrats, man.
Thanks, dude. Yeah,
it's nice to have your, cool. Your work.
Feels good. My little 2002 that could.
That's when I first met you. It was at Morning Motors and you were in that car.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the first, it was Cars and Coffee at that time. That was the first Cars and Coffee that I've ever taken that car to since it was done being restored. Actually, I think that's the first Cars and Coffee I've ever taken that car to, period.
I feel like, was that when we first met you?
Yeah, that was when you first met me.
Did you take the GT3 first? No,
2002 came first.
Oh, okay.
And then everybody was like, you should meet Art. This is like Art's dream car and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, all right. And the first time I learned about you guys was I was at Alice's with my 2002 on a first drive, I go up to Alice's, I stop and get gas, and Kevin Grunman, our amazing best friend,
mentor and
inspiration.
Yep.
Kevin was there with his TII and he's like totally like digging it and all of this stuff. And he was freaking out on the car and he's like, you should come to the DWA rally and you should do this and do that. And that's when I signed up for the rally.
Nice.
You guys let me in and then I completely bailed on you.
But then you hooked us up with some other people, I think like Croc and
Croc came on his own.
No. I met Croc at that Cars and Coffee that you guys had.
Oh, well, who introduced
So then anyways, long story
Croc
short,
just
I
signed
brought,
up for the rally. Yeah. Same one.
I brought my 2002 to that, to the Cars and Coffee you guys used to have.
Yep.
And, we met, and then the second one that you had a month later is when I brought the GT3. Mm. And the first one is when I met Croc. The second one was like, oh, you're a Porsche guy too. Like
I barely even remember your GT3. It was so forgettable.
Sapphire blue.
PDK.
They're all PDK. Oh, 991 GT3.
Yeah.
It had sport bucket seats. It had the red accent stitching. Had a bunch of cool like CXX options on it. And then a matching red cage and some fun stuff. So it was a really, really fun track car. I had more fun in my E46 M3.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways.
Cool, man. Well, congrats, dude.
Thank you. It was a good story, Ollie.
It is
Thank
really
you.
Good.
And
Thank
it,
you.
And
we totally believe it too. which is cool. Yeah.
It's basically he bought that. He did it all for $500. Junkyard. He went to a junkyard. He's all, hello, sir. I'm building a BMW. Can I have some parts?
Well, then the junkyard owner was like, hold out your hand.
Yeah.
The story is like a little bit crazy because he was like, you basically built this car from junkyard parts.
And you're like,
parts.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, yeah, like technically the transmission, the differential, yeah. the seats, not these seats, but the original seats, the wheels, the engine, like yeah. pretty much everything that I used in this car yeah. came from a pick and pull or a BMW junkyard. And then I just went through and redid everything on it. So yeah, technically it's correct. And I did yeah. buy the car for $550, but I also spent, I don't know, 4 or 5 hard years, like intense, like rest, like always making sure the car was being worked on, and somewhere around $60,000-ish out of pocket.
Yeah.
And this is like in, you know, 8 year ago money, 10 year ago money, not today money. This to build my car today would probably cost $150,000 to $200,000 oh, with yeah. all the parts that are on.
Especially
it right
if you
now.
Want to start with a decent
yeah,
car.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. My car was second
There's
owner.
No $550,
no
$500 2002s anymore.
Yeah. My car today would have been a $25,000 like base to yeah. start with.
Yeah. It's pretty sweet. Pretty sweet. All right. That's the podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.